It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 451 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's another great Kickstarter doubleheader. As I talk to creators who have Kickstarter projects going on right now that deserve your support. First up is the return of Jonathan Hedrick, the creator of Freakshow Night, a zombie horror one-shot comic book. It's described as a former convict finds himself a defender of those living among the undead. This, of course, is a follow-up to Freakshow Princess, which he has done. He's done Capable in other books that we talk about. We discuss how this book came to be, how this differs from the previous book, as well as what he has in mind for the future. Then everything wraps up with my fun conversation with Greg Anderson Elise, the creator of Iznana the Were-Spider. The latest installation is called Showtime, and it's also on Kickstarter right now. This is how it's described. Iznana the Were-Spider finds himself squared up against his next challenge, breakdancing in the streets of New York City. We talk about who Iznana is and what he's been up to in the past to get to this point, as well as what we can expect in this a little change of pace for him. We also discuss who the various characters have been and what kinds of things we might expect from Iznana in the future. So I think you're going to enjoy what both of them have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's always great to talk with Jonathan Hedrick, the creator of such wonderful books as Freakshow Princess, Capable, and the upcoming book, The Recount. And you've got a Kickstarter going on right now, which is very important, called Freakshow Night, and that's with a K. And how you doing, Jonathan?
Good. Thanks for having me back on, Wayne. I appreciate it.
It's always good to talk with you. And, well, right away, we'll get right down there. You've already met your goal on Kickstarter, so that's a wonderful thing. I mean, congratulations.
Yes. Yep. Thank you so much. We're at 1815. So now it's just maintaining those backers and getting a few more, hit some stretch goals, and see how much free stuff we can give away.
That's great. That's great. Because as I was talking to you a little earlier, you don't have the daily heart attack facing you these days.
Yep.
Which is always good. It's so good when you don't have to worry. You know, so many people I know, they log on and they can't help but log on again and again and again during the day. And the number doesn't change and they start to, oh no, especially if they haven't made it yet. Yeah. They just freak out. Talk about freak show. They're a freak show when they don't get it.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about that. And that's a great thing. I mean, is this your fourth, if I'm reading this correctly, your fourth Kickstarter?
It'll be the fourth one that I've launched on my own. I am listed as a collaborator on someone else's, but that was a good friend of mine named Jake Estrada who gave me the rights on Kickstarter to go in and edit a few things when he was running that campaign. But he did the heavy lifting on that one. So, but I get a extra funded campaign underneath my record. So.
Well, that's cool. You know, yeah. The more the merrier, and the more experience you get with this thing, I think the better, as you're already proving by meeting your goal. And we're recording this early, too. So the number you gave, hopefully by the time this posts, you'll be a lot farther along than that. So that's a good thing.
That'd be nice. Yep.
Now, well, why don't we get all the important business out of the way? This project is going to conclude on Thursday, October 1st at 12 noon Eastern Time. So don't get complacent. This is not the time to sit back and say, oh, he's got his goal. I don't have to worry.
Right.
No. Now's the time to dive in. And the more people jump in as early as you can, then the more likely that Jonathan's going to bring up these wonderful stretch goals and good things. So don't wait.
Yes, please don't.
Good thing. Okay, so let me get and talk about this, because this is a follow-up to a book that you and I talked about last time. It's called Freak Show Night, and it's with a K, as I like to say. It's described as a zombie horror one-shot comic book, and the line underneath says, a former convict finds himself a defender of those living among the undead.
Right,
that's
yeah.
That's a very different concept.
That's a log line.
I always think that the zombies... Yeah, I always think that zombies have run their course, but then people like you keep coming up with new and wonderful stuff, and I go, oh, I hadn't seen that before.
Right,
so yeah. Very cool. Well, this is in the same universe as the book you did, Freak Show Princess. If I remember correctly, that was your first one, right?
Yep, that's that's right. Yeah, Freak Show Princess was my first comic book that I wrote and self-published and funded. So it was always intended to be a one-shot. And then this other story kind of organically came up in my head, and thought, you know, why not make it within the same universe, like a companion piece? Because I think it would be fun for those who enjoyed Freak Show Princess, but it's still its own self-contained story that has its own identity. So you don't need to have to have read Freak Show Princess. But it could be more fun if you did.
Well, why don't you, granted, you, as you say, you don't necessarily have to have read Freak Show Princess, but talk about what Freak Show Princess was about, because I think that'll help people understand Freak Show Night a little better.
Yeah, Freak Show Princess is a story about this woman and her dog that are trapped inside their boarded up house during a zombie apocalypse. And she's reminiscing about the events that led her to the situation she's at the moment. And as we're seeing the flashbacks, the panels during the present show the threat building more and more on the outside. It's a multi-layered zombie story. If, you know, I think people like to dismiss zombies as being a very easy or simplistic story, but I think there's a lot of layers with Freak Show Princess when it comes to sacrifice with relationship and what we do, that we think that we're helping someone else out by sacrificing ourselves for them in so many ways, but it could affect them worse down the road. So that's what I like to tell people. There's a layer of, you know, romance and tragedy in it as well.
Mm-hmm. I read it. It was a really good story. I really enjoyed it. So I'm kind of glad you're going back to that universe, because it was there's a lot to discover. I think it was nice to see that window into it, but I always kind of felt like you could do more with that. So I'm kind of glad you're going back.
Thank you. Yeah. And I'm really excited that there was an opportunity to go back to it, because I really enjoyed, you know, revisiting that world. And I think having this second book, shows that there's a lot more opportunity for more stories to be told in the Freak Show universe.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting to me that zombies, a lot of people think, are the stars of their show, and that's not usually the case. They're usually kind of the random elements that show up every once in a while to propel the story along. Yeah. I always remember the old Incredible Hulk show. He would turn into the Hulk twice, at the halfway point and at the very end. And the rest of the time, it was all this other stuff going on. So they called it the Incredible Hulk, but he didn't show up very often.
Right.
And the zombies are that way. I mean, out of the blue, a zombie will show up and things will start to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not following zombies all the way around. It's usually the humans going on with that, which is, I think that's kind of a challenge. But that's something I think you've gotten really well, you know, down, is being able to build these people around this thing that's going to happen and make that an interesting thing and still keep the zombies interesting and unexpected. So I think you do that real well.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Yeah, the zombie genre has so many stories that you can tell, because I think what people enjoy about it the most is that there's just one variable in our real world that's changed. And outside of that, it's still human nature. People are going to act like people do. And when society falls, we really see the ugliness in people more than we do the living dead. So there's a lot of stuff that can be explored with that.
It's interesting. Of course, we're going through the pandemic right now as we're talking and stuff. And so I thought a good writer is probably paying attention to the newspapers and articles out there, seeing the craziness that's going on.
For sure. Yeah. Life imitating art sometimes.
Yeah. Did anything, I mean, obviously you've worked on this before all this hit, but has anything going on now kind of made you think, wait a minute, I could do a story with that?
Well, some of the smaller things, like being out of common household items, you can really see how quickly people just start to become unruly when you don't have toilet paper or the hand sanitizer. People are starting to fight and wrestle each other in the grocery stores over these items that we took for granted just months ago. So I think that could be something that, you know, I might put in my back pocket for later, because it's really sad that we just lose it really quickly over things like that.
I remember when Katrina hit, and I happened to be talking to – I was at a convention, and I saw the creator of The Walking Dead.
Robert Kirkman.
Yeah, I said to him, because Katrina was going on and all this stuff was happening, and I said to him, are you thinking about doing a Walking Dead Katrina? And he laughed. He said, I'm paying attention. He says,
yeah.
So that's the kind of thing that happens on when these things like that happen. And, you know, real life sometimes is way wilder than the stuff we can imagine. So
exactly. Yeah.
So, well, why don't we start? One of the things I want to talk about is the freak show universe. Why do you call it the freak show? Why do the stories always have the first word freak show in it? Is there some part of the stories that that has to do with?
Yeah, I'm kind of – speaking of Robert Kirkman, I kind of took something out of his page where in The Walking Dead, you never heard the word zombie. They always called them walkers, or, you know, they would run into another group and they called them biters or so forth. And I kind of like that idea, because we all go into it, and I even call it a zombie book. But by having the characters call them zombies, we lose a little bit of it. So the main character in Freak Show Princess called them freak shows, but she had always used that term freak show to describe something that she didn't care for, or, you know, like a clique or a class of people. She'd call them freak shows. And that lingo transferred to the zombies once they became apparent in the story. And then I continued that theme in Freak Show Night, where our main character, Red, he refers to his time in prison with the freak shows, the other inmates, and, you know, how he was surrounded by them when he was incarcerated. And now he's on the outside and he's still surrounded by them. So I think that word being interchangeable like that in people's vocabulary makes it hits harder than just using the word zombie.
Well, it's a more creative too, I have to say.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Everybody uses the word zombie, you know, it's old hat.
Right.
You know. You get a chance to put a nice creative spin, and you're emphasizing something different by saying that and by setting it up this way. So I think that's, again, that's a real creative thing. I think that's, you know, I have to say that I've read a lot of zombie stories that to me were not all that creative.
I've read a lot of zombie stuff too, and there's some good and there's a lot of bad.
Well, some of them, the zombies are the main characters. So I'm always kind of like, I always wonder how that's possible. I mean, they're dead, they're undead, but they don't really function all that well. I mean, you know, it's the threat, it's their danger that makes them interesting, you know, as far as the story goes.
Yeah.
And if we care about the people, and that's one thing that your writing does real well, it gets us to understand and care about the people really quickly. And then when the zombies start to show up, we care about what's going to happen with them.
Exactly.
But the zombie's going to do something to them. So I'm kind of fascinated by the story of the notion that this is a former convict.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see many stories talking about that kind of a character. What was it that made you want to go with that kind of person?
I actually pulled that idea from my own experience with my father, who the main character Red in Freakshow Night is loosely based off of, and they have the same name. And I didn't know my biological father till about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And one day I just decided to look him up, and I took the little information I had on him and Google searched him as best as I could. And I came across this article in Colorado Springs of someone with the same name as him, and the age matched what I had for his birthday. One thing led to another, and I was able to find him, which prison he was at. So I wrote to him, got a letter back, and we slowly built a relationship after years of never even knowing each other through these letters and eventually phone calls. And about a year after we started connecting like that, I flew out there and met him in person. And when I was coming up with the idea for Freak Show Night, I just felt like his story, his real story of why he's in prison, could fit in a zombie universe. And to play with the idea of him being outside of prison was a lot of fun. And also a way to kind of honor him at the same time, because we let bygones be bygones for him not being there. And I had to do something with it creatively, you know, just as a writer, I needed to put that down on paper. So,
but wow, that, you know, I don't want to lose track of the comic, but that's an amazing experience. I mean,
yeah.
What was that like for you? I mean, to do that, did you know he was in prison? Is that what happened?
I did not know. I didn't know where he was at all. So until I saw that article from a Colorado newspaper online, that's when things kind of came together. And if that didn't happen, if he wasn't incarcerated, I may not have still found him. It was his criminal record that made it easier for him to be found online. Wow. So who knows, you know, if that wasn't the case, you know, it's almost like a bittersweet thing, because unfortunately he's in prison. He should actually, from the last letter I got him, might make parole by the end of the year. But yeah, if he wasn't in there, I may not still have been able to find him. Wow. And then I might not even have this comic book. It might have been something completely different.
Isn't that interesting? Well, that is just, you know, real life, like I said, you can't write this stuff. I mean, that's just amazing stuff. I'll tell you a real quick thing. For a while, I was really interested in finding out what people named Wayne Hall had gone through.
Okay.
So I set it up in the early days of Google. I set it up, and I came to understand that people with my name had really bad things happen to them.
Oh.
There was a guy that was a guy comes into this auto dealership, and he goes in and he says he's going to buy this car, you know. And then the guy, the person in the deal room, just shows him the car. He drives it around. And he says, "I got cash. I'll give you cash to take this off the lot today." And so the guy who was working there and showed him the car said, "Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'll just take this around the corner here, and we'll do a couple of minor adjustments to it, and you'll be ready to take it home." So he takes the car, and he goes out of sight, and the guy's waiting, and he's waiting, and he's waiting. And he finally goes to the guy, "Where's the guy with my car?" And he says, "Oh, well, you know, he just left. I don't know where he's gone. He's just taken off. He had taken the money and the car and just left." And, of course, the guy's name who had given all the money, his name was Wayne Hall.
Oh, wow.
I'll tell you just a couple other ones real quick. There was another one where there was a guy at a motel, and this guy got really angry with his supervisor, and he got fired, the person did. He ran home, got a gun, and killed the supervisor. And of course, the supervisor's name was Wayne Hall. And I stopped doing that because it was horrible stuff. Was going like, "Oh my goodness."
Right?
I didn't want that to happen to me.
So, of course not, yeah.
So I can understand that's such an interesting story, though. That's fascinating how that goes. I mean, did that change your perception of yourself?
Yeah, I went from someone who was, you know, angry about it for three decades of my life to one night caring about this person who I had barely known, you know, after a letter or two, I was actually concerned about him. Like, is he healthy? Are they taking care of him? And is he getting what he needs? And it's so quick. It's interesting how quickly, you know, you can be immediately attached to someone just because they're a blood relative to you. So, and then the greatest thing that came out of it was that I was able to meet more family members on his side that live in my area. So it all worked out, you know, in an odd way.
See, well, this is so fascinating because, you know, a prison life is a very structured life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some people, when they come out of prison, they're used to that structure.
Yes.
And they struggle in an unstructured society like we have, pretty much. So, I mean, is that what your character read? Is he going through that kind of a thing?
Yes. He had a mundane life inside prison, and now he has a mundane life outside of prison. And he went into jail for a violent crime, and now, ironically, he's using violence to survive. So I like the idea of playing with, you know, the yin and yang part of it all. What got him into prison is that actually what's keeping him living right now. And him being in prison, having that day in, day out, monotonous life is actually working for him now during a zombie apocalypse. So I think that was fun storytelling with that.
Wow. I see, that's going to be a really fascinating story to read. I mean, are you kind of, is this, does your dad, first of all, does your dad know that you have based a character on him?
I did. I told him about it. And he was flattered, and he says, just don't kill me off in it. And I said, no promises. No promises.
That's a writer, comic writers. Now several who have introduced their friends as characters. Yeah. David Peterson was the first one I knew. He had all the Mouse Guard people were all his friends because he knew them. I thought he was using the Knights of the Round Table, but no, these were his friends because he knew those people and he could tell what they were going to do. Yeah. And other people, totally imagination, but it's really interesting when you can do this kind of stuff. I mean, is this something you're concerned about? Like when your dad comes out, are you dealing with a kind of a worry that you have?
No, I'm excited for him to see it. I think he'll get a kick out of it of how close the character resembles to him, and the little things I put in there. I don't think he would be upset. I think he just think it's really cool that he was in a comic book.
Super cool. I'm just fascinated. Of course, this is a one shot, which means anything can happen. And your dad said you didn't want to be killed. Is there any chance that we're going to see a Freak Show Night 2, shall we say?
Maybe not Freak Show Night 2, but I have opened up the doors for more, even more Freak Show stories after this. For example, there's a stretch goal in the Freak Show Night campaign for a new Freak Show story that my friend David Galliano wrote. David is the writer of Savage Bastards at Mad Cave, and he lives really close to me. We became good friends over the past year. So I threw the idea out to him, hey, would you want to write just an 8-page story that takes place in the Freak Show universe? And he was all about it. So he did that. I sent it to my artist for Capable, because I want each of these stories to have a unique identity. So a different art team each time, and also give it like an anthology feel when it eventually, hopefully, gets collected. So that story is called Freak Show Jester, to keep the style of the royalty type feel, princess, knight, jester, and we'll see what other type of titles will come, and each of them being related to what the main character is. So I'm really excited to give that IP to another writer and have them play in that universe too.
That'll be interesting, you know, because I talked about David Peterson. He does that every once in a while. He does what they call Legends of the Guard, mm-hmm. where he has other people write and draw and stuff like that. And it's always interesting to him how he sees people go places he never would have dreamt to go. And I imagine that's going to be it. What if they do something that you particularly don't want to have happen?
Well, I told David, you know, I'm going to put my editor hat on this time. I told him like what things I did want to happen, like at least write this part in it. And, you know, I told him I still had final say in it, but his script, he turned it in and there wasn't much that I needed to ask to be changed. So it has his style of writing in it in the same universe, and it tells another great story. And I think it's going to be really cool that, the backers for this campaign, if we hit that goal, they're going to get that comic book's actually going to be printed separately. It's going to be its own separately printed comic book, and they'll non-physical backers will get a digital copy, of course. But I love giving people extra in my Kickstarter campaigns. I want them to unbox that package and just stuff fly out of it. They got the book they ordered and there was extra stickers and magnets and whatever. So my goal is just to get as much more tangible product into the backers' hands.
See, I backed the product, your project already.
Thank you.
And I because I have a stack of books that I have yet to read as tall as me, I'm tending not to go for the physical copies these days. I backed the digital, as it's called, the digital freak show on here, because I wanted to. I have more space on my computer than I have on my floor.
Right. Of course,
So that's what I'm doing right now. I'm going to get the digital version, which I'll be happy to have. That way, of course, I can read it on my iPad anywhere I go with it. So I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. There's one thing about this. I also wanted to ask about other characters. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an idea who the people are? Because there's got to be more than him than in the zombies. Who are the other people that Red are going to interact with in the story?
Well, without giving too much spoilers away, we're going to see Red interact with someone from Freakshow Princess. And if you read that, there's only less than a handful that could be. And then we're going to see him meet up with a new character that may be the actual future main character of another Freakshow one shot. So I tried to set this one up more for a follow-up while still making it its own complete story from beginning to end, but give a little bit more of a teaser to another story, where Freakshow Princess was kind of subtle whether there could be anything else after that or not.
Mm-hmm. Now, I saw someplace where you had mentioned you were thinking about collecting all these Freakshow stories into like one collected volume.
Right. Yeah.
Is that like down the road? I mean, when you get a certain number of them together, you're going to do that?
Yeah. I'm hoping, you know, I'll write another 24 pager after this and then be able to add the story that David wrote. I already reached out to another writer to start brainstorming for a different 8-page story in the future. So maybe after three of those 24 pagers and two, you know, 8-page side stories, that might be enough worth combining into a trade or graphic novel and add some other goodies to it. Maybe some short stories or poems, things like that, to beef it up a little bit and give people more bang for their buck.
That'd be fun. I mean, you know, you could always have a new story in with the collected old ones.
Right. Yep.
You could always do. So there's a lot of good things you could do with it. Another thing before we move on from Freakshow stuff, I noticed that Freakshow Princess got a lot of attention
when it comes to
indie awards and stuff. As I see it on the Kickstarter page, Best Indie Originals for you for Freakshow Princess. Then there was Best New Comic Book Author for you, I think. And then Best Zombie Comic and Best Horror Comic.
Yeah.
Did that give you any pressure when it comes to following up? You know, you've got this well-recognized story. Mm-hmm. How did you approach that? I mean, did that change how you approached this second story?
Well, I actually found out about those awards about a week before I launched the campaign for Freak Show Night. So I was like, well, I got to run with it. So I added it, you know, into the campaign story to let people know that, you know, there's some clout behind the previous one. I don't feel any pressure that Freak Show Night needs to win anything. If anything, I hope it wins just on the art alone, because the artist Stefano Cardicelli is just amazing. He just brought a real good, gritty, raw feel to Red and the universe that he's living in. So he, if anyone gets any accolades for this, I hope it's him before me, because he's putting in a lot of heavy lifting with the pencils, the inks, and he's watercoloring this story.
There's some pages on the Kickstarter project page, and it is pretty amazing. I do have to say his use of color is real interesting. Mm-hmm. There's that one image you use.
the real gory one.
Yeah. Let's just say that somebody's going to have a serious headache when this is done. Right. With the way that it's done. It's just it's an interesting image, and it's not one you see very often in comics. So I think you've made a good choice with this one.
Thank you.
To use that. Now, this is a different art team than Freak Show Princess, is it?
That's correct, yes. Different interior artist and a different letter. And that was a tough decision to make. I did talk to the original artist for Freak Show Princess before hiring Stefano. We had some chats about it. And in the end, I just decided that if I stuck with Ben, who did Freak Show Princess, and he knocked it out of the park, I'm 100% happy with his work. And Freak Show Princess wouldn't have been the same without him. But if I stuck with him, I would have needed to continue to stick with him. And what if after two or three of these, I go to do the fourth and I can't get him back for some reason? So I just thought it would be better to just go ahead and make the decision to always have a different art team. And it'll give it that anthology feel. And each story will have its own identity. They'll still be connected by the same common threads. But I think it'd be more fun for the readers to be able to be transported into a different story. But through the art, and because the art tells so much too in comic books without even necessarily having dialogue and narrative in it.
But it looks like Ben's doing the Kickstarter exclusive cover.
I did. Yep. I did bring Ben back and the same colorist and the same letter. I asked them at the very least to do that, and they were all on board for it. And I thought that'd be really cool to do as a homage to Freak Show Princess. You know, it's in the same style. I should add a side-by-side comparison of those two covers. But Ben did the pencils and inks on that. Sunil Gagar, the original colorist, colored it. And CJ Jeffrey came back and put the old style font. So I thought it was really fun to bring them back and have an exclusive cover.
And you got other artists doing variant covers too, right?
That's right. Yeah. So my artist on the recount, graciously did a variant cover for me. That one's just as amazing, more amazing than I could have asked for. There's also the cover that I created, the writer's variant. People that are listening in, I can't, see what we're talking about. Please come check that out, because I think it's probably the most unique cover that anyone has ever thought of in the history of comics. I hope that maybe it starts a trend, and maybe, the top two start doing things like that. Who knows? Or maybe it'll be a complete failure. I don't know. But I had fun. I'm going to keep a copy for myself for sure.
I got a huge kick because it looks like you drink coffee.
Yes. Oh, well, yeah. I'm a big coffee drinker. So,
that's okay. More than that, we won't say, but it's kind of a cute thing. It's a fun idea, I think, to do that because, it's not many writers are really good at drawing.
Correct. Yeah.
And so, this is a good chance for you to show that even a writer can do these things if you're creative enough. I think that's really great.
And that's, you use the right word, creativity. That's the part about most about it, being creative.
And you got a blank sketch one too.
Yeah, I really want. I enjoy as a collector the blank sketch covers, so I always like to throw those in. And I didn't want to just do another white one, so I asked for it to be orange. So it's unique. I haven't seen a blank orange cover from any of the other publishers. I've seen red, green, and black. So I thought this one would be a lot, you know, different and unique and timely for it being released in the fall. So with Halloween and Thanksgiving, the orange being synonymous with that.
Is that when you expect these books to come out around Halloween?
I'm aiming for it. I really want to ship them prior to Halloween. I just can't guarantee it right now with, you know, the state of the world we live in right now. So I gave each pledge the November, estimated shipment just to be safe, because I don't want to upset anyone that really wanted it. But I am going to do the best I can to get it in people's hands in October.
Very cool, because I always talk with people about marketing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And this book screams Halloween.
Yes.
To me. Yes. It just does. You know, I always tell the story about how it was a Christmas book that came out like in November, and it kept going until May.
Yeah.
And I wondered if I was the only one still buying that Christmas book that far along.
Right. Yeah.
Because, you know, people get a little bored with Christmas. I think it was Grant Morrison was doing it. And I was like, I mean, I was faithfully buying because I'm a big Christmas guy. But I kept wondering, I was asking, am I the only one ordering this? Yeah. The store went on. Okay. I said, ever since then, though, it's really funny. They put out his follow-ups. They're always a one-shot, and they always come out the Wednesday before Christmas.
That's so fun. Yeah, that's timely.
That's smart, too, because right. The bad news is you cannot be late.
Exactly.
If you're late, people say, oh, I don't want that book anymore. That's over with. We're done.
And that's why I was hell-bent on making sure this campaign launched in September and ran through that month, so I can get the funding in mid-October. And if I have all parts ready, I can send it straight to the printer and hopefully get that back in time.
I also like the names of the pledge levels.
Thank you. That's the first time I actually really try to get creative with the pledge levels.
Well, as I said, I'm in the digital freak show.
Yes.
And there's a physical freak show. There's a double freak show. Exclusive freak show. Variant freak show. Super freak show of the best value. I find that's kind of fun. And the retailer freak show, which I've been in some of those stores. Yeah. And slabbed freak show where you're going to get a CGC version too.
Yeah, that's my favorite name for all of them, slabbed, because it kind of sounds like a dead person on a slab, you know.
So it's really good. So again, this is going to end on October the 1st on a Thursday at 12 noon Eastern time, but don't wait. Now is the time to get on there and do these good things and sign up for it, because we want Jonathan to be as relaxed as possible.
Yes, please.
Now, I mentioned other books that you're doing. I want to specifically get into Capable.
Yes.
Because you and I talked about this last time, and I've got to read issue 2. Mm-hmm. Which I really like. You kickstarted. I think you were kickstarting that the last time you and I talked.
Yeah, I think and, like right after we talked. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was successful, of course, and it came out, and I was so happy to get it. I really find this story compelling.
Thank you.
You know, I'm so fascinated about how a person would react. Somebody that might have what we consider a disability. How would they react if suddenly they were, not only able to walk like that, but be able to be like a speedster, you know. And I think you've done a really good job of, you know, getting into the character, his personality, and doing that. And of course, it's a diverse group of people in the book, which I also like.
Right.
And it's just so fascinating. You know, the second book, he's obviously matured a little bit since the first book. He's even drawn a little bit taller and things like that. But talk about, you know, the character growth is not something comics are good at.
Yeah.
Usually. I mean, Batman has been Batman. He changes sometimes when a writer takes over, but he's still that same Batman, usually as long as that writer is writing him. Mm-hmm. But you're having character growth happen. This guy is a different guy. You know, he's changed a lot because of the events of the first issue. Talk about making characters grow and how you did that with Capable.
Yeah, with Capable, it's a real challenge to – I didn't want to just write a story where the main character is disabled in the first issue, and then the rest of the entire series, he's superpowered. And we don't mention the fact that he was disabled, because then it loses the point of the title, and it's not what people were buying into at the very beginning. So one of the most challenging parts of writing that series is that going forward, I'm going to need to still connect the main character and the surrounding characters to the fact that they were disabled at some point. So that needs to be the common theme throughout this series, or I would have abandoned it. Like you mentioned, Derek in issue two, you know, he's standing a little bit taller because even though he experienced a tragedy in issue one, and not that he moved on, but he's experiencing a world now where people are patting him on the back. Where, you know, a week ago he was being ridiculed for, you know, how he was. So issue three explores that even more. And issue three is almost completely done. Hopefully I can kickstart at the end of this year. And we see more people around him, how they're going to act too when they notice that they have superpowers. And we get a tease in that in issue two with like the bad guy. How people aren't necessarily going to do the right thing. And with that character in issue two, he had a good reason why he was being a bad guy or committing crime because of the injustice he experienced. But what if someone is just plain evil that gets this gets these newfound powers? And we're going to start seeing that in issue three. So, I love Capable. I wish it was a book that I could put out monthly because I'm not connected with it. But unfortunately, in the indie world, it doesn't happen that soon. But
well, you know, quality is worth waiting for.
Absolutely. Yep.
So I feel like, you know, if you haven't gotten Capable, you need to check out this book because I think it's very unique as far as comics today. Its approach to things, the way that the quality of it, the characters, it's got a very real feel to it, even though his superpowers are involved. And yeah. I love that about the book, which leads me to ask, you know, we got to make sure before I let you go that we talk about how you're going to get these books. How do people get a hold of, say, Capable or Freak Show, the books?
Well, if you're a fan of reading them digitally, you can. They're on several digital platforms. Comixology is, you know, the big one. Comic House, which is spelled HAUS, that's a UK digital platform that kind of works like Netflix does, where you pay a subscription and then you read as many comics as you want during that time. And they're also on SpinWiz Comics, and that's a free platform as well. You, as far as if you want a physical copy, you can approach me on social media. I'll answer DMs on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. But what I would recommend if you really want to get a physical copy is talk to your local comic book store. Have them reach out to me and I can work on a deal with them where they can get copies at cost, where I'm not making any profit off of them whatsoever. I just want to get it into their store so they have product that they can sell. And in doing it that way, you're helping more people out. You're helping a small business. You're helping an independent creator. You're getting a comic book. And that's the method that I encourage most people to do is reach out to your local comic book store, let them talk to me about it, and I'll give them a good deal.
Now, how do we find you on social media?
Jonathan Hedrick. That's HEDRICK. If you search for my name in the three major platforms, I should be one of the closer ones to the top.
Yeah. Very good. Now, before I let you go, there's something I got to talk about real briefly. Sure. As like November sounds like it's going to be Jonathan Hedrick month because you're going to have these books. And real briefly, I want to touch on something you and I talked about before is coming as well. And we talked a little bit about it earlier about the recount, which I got a chance. I pulled a string or two and I got a chance to read the number 0 and the number 1, which is wow. this is like 180 degrees away from Capable and Freak Show Night and stuff, but it's still as gripping. I mean, your writing always keeps me I keep flipping the page going like, now what, now what, now what? And I get to the end and I go, oh no, that's not the end. And why don't you describe what this is about real briefly?
So Recount, it takes place in a fictional world where, and I always have to stress the word fiction when it comes to this story. A fictional president gets assassinated by someone in his Secret Service detail during his resignation speech. And then the vice president has to quickly become the stand-in president while the conspirators make it known to the public that they're going to go after everyone that put this corrupt president into power, including releasing voting information to the public. And they encourage citizens to take action against each other. So it's a very it's going to be a controversial book without me even having to market it that way because there's a political character involved. But there was a lot of strategy to make sure that this isn't going to be an agenda book. There's no sides that are going to be weighed more than the other. I don't even use the word Republican or Democrat in the entire series. So it's all entertainment value. No, again, no agendas being pushed. So it's like if you're a fan of 24 or a Tom Clancy books, I think you'll get a lot out of this book. It's similar to that.
Mm-hmm. And it's called The Recount, and it starts in November. The first issue, I think, is going to come out in November. Yep. Now, this one you're going to have to order through Diamond, though. This is not an indie book. This is going to come out through Scout Comics, right?
That's right. Yep. So it's available for pre-order now. So if you go to your local comic book store, let them know that you want to pre-order a copy or two of The Recount. And while you're there, why don't you ask them to see if we can send some copies of Freak Show Princess and Capable to them.
Sounds good. I think that's really good. Because like I said, Jonathan, your writing always grips me. And I think your characters are the things that always make me want to keep going because I want to know what happens to these people.
Thank you so much for saying that. That means a lot.
Gosh, it just, you know, I can't think of one in specific that's different from the others in that line. I'm always wanting to know what's going to happen to these people. Now what, you know, and I think that's, I miss that in some people's writing, but not yours. Yours, I'm always happy to see that. So I think Jonathan, I mean, your Kickstarter for Freak Show Night with a K is already a success. And I hope by the time this posts, you will be even farther along than the number. In fact, you've gone up some since we started talking.
Yeah, someone backed $30 while we were talking, so that was pretty nice.
Unfortunately, they weren't listening to us as we were talking.
Yeah, they did all their own.
That's right. That's a good sign, though.
Yeah.
That's a good thing to have. So all I can say, Jonathan, keep it up. You are doing such good stuff, and I'm just fascinated. Are there other things coming that we should know about?
Yeah. Speaking of Capable, there's going to be a 10-page short story coming out eventually in a different anthology sometime this year on Kickstarter. And that 10-page Capable short story is called Harry's Day. And the story runs concurrent with the events that take place in issue 1. So you learn more about Derek's friend, Harry, and what he was doing on that day when he discovered he had superpowers as well. So that story's all wrapped. I'm just waiting for that anthology that's going to be in to launch that campaign. And there's a huge anthology that I'll be in with many, many, many other great creators called Cthulhu Invades Oz. I think that's going to launch either next month or November. And It's basically the world of Wizard of Oz, and Cthulhu makes a scene. And I was fortunate enough to write the Tin Man story, and that was a lot of fun. I gave him a Captain Ahab spin, where he's on a pirate ship sailing to find Cthulhu because Cthulhu stole his heart, and it was a real dark twist on the Tin Man, and I had a lot of fun with that. Looking forward to people checking that out.
That's going to be great. Is that going to be Kickstarter? How's that going to happen?
That's going to be Kickstarter.
So we should keep our ear to the ground on that one, stuff like that too.
Absolutely.
Do you have a website, by the way? I always want to ask about that.
No, I'm working on it. It's in the beginning stages because it's just so many pans in the fire right now. Eventually, I promise, that way I can start selling some capable merch and sending people there when they want to buy things straight from me. Eventually. Well,
when that happens, you will have to come out again and talk, and then you can promote it.
Yeah, it'd be great.
People can know about it. That'd be fun to do. Yeah. Well, Jonathan, as always, it's a wonderful time to talk with you, and you do such creative and really fascinating storytelling that I'm always glad to when I see your name on a book, I'm always glad to buy it and to get it.
That's great. So, thank you.
So I highly recommend to people, find these books. You will really enjoy them. They're great stuff. So just keep it going. I can't wait to see what you've got coming. I'm sure you got other ideas popping around in there, just dying to come out. And I bet they'll be fun when they hit. So we'll have to talk again next time when that happens, so that we can make sure people know about what's coming. So
I look forward to it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Hi, my name is Greg Anderson Elisei, and I'm the writer and creator of Iznana, the Were-Spider. Iznana the Were-Spider is a horror fantasy coming-of-age book about the son of Anansi the Spider, the West African and Caribbean god of stories. Throughout the series, Iznana meets and interacts with various figures of Black mythology, folklore, and spirituality. In the next one-shot, Showtime, Iznana finally finds time to wind down from his busy schedule of fighting extra-dimensional villains when he meets and joins a group of street Showtime dancers.
It's great to welcome to the podcast Greg Anderson Elisei from Iznana. Did I get that right, Greg?
Yes, you got it right. Iznana the Were-Spider. Thank you, Wayne.
Yeah, it's good to talk with you about this. I'm always interested in diversity in books, and this is going to be one of those books. Now, I came across your stuff in a book called, I think it was Modern Mythology. And yeah. I think you did one of the stories in the early part of the book, I think, was an Iznana story. And I was fascinated by it. And so I was really happy when I got a chance to talk with you about this. But let's do the important stuff right out of the bat. You've got a Kickstarter going on right now, and it's called Iznana the Were-Spider Showtime. And I'll read the brief description. It says, Iznana the Were-Spider finds himself squared up against his next challenge, breakdancing in the streets of New York City. I don't know many comics to do that, so that's kind of good. The really good news for you, Greg, is the fact that your Kickstarter, you have already met your goal. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I always tell people you don't get the daily heart attack that way.
That is very true.
So you don't have to do that. So you're past your goal, which is wonderful. Let me get the other important information. Is this your goal? Well, everything's going to come to a conclusion now on Wednesday, September 30th, at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. So it's coming up. As I always tell people, do not wait until the last minute, because this is the time for you to get on board so all these wonderful stretch goals that I'm sure you have in mind can start to come into play. So, and as I always do, I pledged for the digital pack.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that support.
I have this stack of books as tall as I am, and my computer has more space than my floor does. So I'm gonna do that for this time. Although I encourage people, if you really want the good stuff, you know, I would get the paper copy and do those good things. So as I said, congratulations, man. I think that is such a wonderful thing to have that happen for you. And so now you can kind of just worry about stretch goals and stuff. Have you got some good ones in mind?
I definitely have a couple. It's funny. Usually I have some in mind prior, but I was not expecting for us to make our goal as quickly as we did. So I didn't really have time to try to ramble around, but I am considering having a ebook, you know, that will be digital for all the backers of Another Is Not a Story. I'm already speaking to an artist, a possible artist, and he's very on board. He wants to do it, but I just need to finalize a couple of things, especially with the script, because this was a script that I actually wrote a while ago, but for some odd reason, I cannot find it. So I believe it was on an old laptop that I had that totally crashed, and I've never got to back up that story. But that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, well, that's good. So let's see. You've got the good things going on, stuff like that. Why don't you, in case somebody doesn't know who Isnana the Were-Spider is, why don't you give us a description as to who that character is?
Sure. So Isnana the Were-Spider is based off of the stories of Anansi the Spider from West Africa and Caribbean folklore. My character is a son. It's the two of them trying to stop these creatures from causing chaos while trying not to drive each other crazy at the same time. And what I'm trying to do with this series is use it as a way to introduce people to more black mythological gods and heroes, because, you know, in school, it's not really required for us to be educated on them. It's usually the Greek gods, the European fairy tales, and so on. So as the series goes on, they meet characters from African mythology, Caribbean folktales, and African-American stories and spiritualities of all sorts, just to showcase various gods and heroes from other cultures that we can be educated on.
Yeah, because I have to admit, this is one of the things that until I read that in the modern mythology book, I wasn't at all familiar with, and I was really intrigued by what I read there. And you made available to me several of the volumes you've been working on. I mean, you've had volume one and then volume two, then I think a book called Ballads. This is called Showtime. And so you've been busy with this, Nana. Doing that. So when did you start? I mean, when did all this start to happen for you by creating a comic for this?
Well, definitely what inspired it for me was when I would ask certain people if they knew who Anansi the Spider was, because I wanted to tell them a bit of a Anansi joke or Anansi story. And I was always greeted with, "Who is that? I have no idea who that is." And I especially heard it from a couple of black folks, especially I realized if you weren't quite educated on Anansi from maybe your family or your parents, there was a chance that you never ever heard of this character. And the thing that makes that unfortunate is that out of all the black deities and gods, he is probably the most well known. So that was something that I felt I need to do something about this. And that inspired me trying to do the next generation from Anansi, creating his son Isnana, who would hopefully be meeting all these various figures from black mythology, folklore, spirituality, and so on. And just sort of having fun with that and creating modern stories with it while still hoping to keep the core essence of the old traditional stories. So that was what inspired it. I think I was inspired maybe around 2014-15. I found I had the script written down eventually. I found an artist for it who was Walter Osley, and we published it in 2016, volume one.
Wow. Wow, that's great. That's great. So how many stories are usually in each volume?
So for volume one and two, there are two stories. The second story is usually shorter, and it's sort of going into – it's just a completely different story. I like a variety of genres, so you get to see me mess around with that. And even for ballads, there is two stories as well. Even though it's a single shot, a single one shot issue, that's the standard 24, I believe, page comic. There's two stories, two full complete stories, and Showtime will have one main story, but we also have a bonus story, which is about four pages. So far, every release has had two stories.
Great. Now, what's interesting to me was the origin didn't happen until the second volume. Was there a reason why you waited till then?
Yeah, the origin is I haven't even actually tackled it entirely. I showcased a little bit of it at the second story of volume one. It's like the first sort of, I guess, part of it. And then you get maybe some hints of the origin in volume two as well, but we don't quite see what the full origin is. And I'm a fan of non-linear storytelling. You know, I enjoy it. I just wanted to jump straight into him working and learning his craft and already on his journey. But we will be going into his origin very soon. I am planning on, hopefully, that will be volume four, because volume three will collect a lot of the shorts that I've been doing in one shots, including the appearances that he's been doing in anthologies. And then volume four will hopefully finally tackle his full origin of seeing how he came to our Earth and how it connects to Anansi, and what exactly was Anansi doing? What was he caught in that brings Isnana to our world to look for him?
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about was it a challenge to get, you know, these books into stores, or do you sell these as an indie producer? How do you get these into people's hands?
Well, I'm always hustling online. I'm always looking for ways I can sell the book. There's been a lot of reviews that have helped. Amazon has helped tremendously. When conventions were happening before the whole COVID situation, I was constantly going around United States as much as I can, you know, to try to find conventions and sell in person and market it. And whenever I made a trip to a new town, a new city, I always looked to see what comic stores were around. I would always call ahead of time to see if the retailers were open to supporting independent comics or who were open to having this new book there. For the most part, there were a good number that wanted this type of book. They never heard about it. They did their research after I called them, and then they will come back to me. They will call me back and say, yeah, we definitely want to stock it. So it definitely has its plus sides and downsides of owning your own product, but you also have to really hustle because you don't have the same distribution as, you know, a big company or a small press company for that matter as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because, you know, one of the things I love about comics is learning about things I don't know much about. And to be honest, I don't know much about the culture you're talking about. And so for me, I was really pleased to be able to begin to dig in there a little bit and begin to understand a little more. So that's one of the things I wanted to tell you. I really love that about the books, is that I get to understand these things a lot better than I did before. And for me, that's one of the great things about comics. And I just think you do one of the best jobs of that, in making something that might be a little less known accessible. And I just think that's a wonderful thing.
Thank you. That makes me feel real good.
Yeah. So as far as, I guess, I'm sure you're not traveling very much now, and so you're focusing largely online, I think I heard you say. If we wanted to get that, or before we dive into the stories and stuff like that, where's the place for us to do that? Where's the best place for us to get your books?
Well, I have a website, www.ecwid.com. Actually, my fault. It's webwaycomics.ecwid.com. An easy way right now is just to Google Webway Comics or Isnana the Were-Spider, or Google Isnana the Were-Spider Showtime on Google, and then you will find a Kickstarter. There's an easy way on the Kickstarter. You can actually pledge for the previous books as well.
Now, if I read this correctly, if you go to the Kickstarter, you can actually access those other earlier editions and things like that.
Yep, you could also get them at a discount as well. You just got to wait a little longer. But yeah, you can get volume 1, you can get volume 2, you get the last one shot, you could even get the Modern Mythology book that you also, you know, discovered is Nanathu.
That's good stuff. So I'm interested. What this book, Showtime, which is not about the channel, it's about him actually, like it's Showtime kind of stuff instead of the network. And it's great fun. This is about breakdancing, which I just found. I don't know many books that talk about breakdancing on the streets of New York City. So for me, I'm really fascinated. You made some of it available to me to look at, and I was really fascinated by the artwork and the characters, you know, much more diverse than a lot of comics are. And from what I was reading, you're familiar with a lot of people who do these kinds of things. Is this like in a community you live in? There are a lot of people who do that, or you just got to know some people who do that. How did this become something that you wanted to explore?
What inspired it were students that I had at a art program that I was educating at. I am a teaching artist. I teach video production, film work, and occasionally podcasts. And there was the very first program that I was teaching at. We had a whole floor dedicated to the arts. You know, we had film work, we had dance, we had music production, we even had culinary and so on and so forth. And, you know, it wasn't required for certain students to stay in one part. I mean, they can stay committed, that's what they wanted, but if they wanted to experiment with a different field of art, they could always do that. And I had some students that were just these amazing, amazing dancers. And I spent some time just hanging out with them and just watching them work. And I was just totally fascinated by everything that they were doing. They told me a little bit of their skills, of what certain moves were called. And I just loved those kids so much. And when I was creating Is Nana, when I wanted to give him a group of friends finally, because he's in the previous stories, all he does is his responsibilities of stopping these creatures, stopping these monsters, and hopefully, you know, righting this wrong that he imposed on himself to do. But we never actually get to see him as a kid. We never get to see him have fun. And I wanted to showcase that. And I remembered these students that I had, and that just sort of made me feel, wait, I want to have Is Nana doing that. And a little bit of it was a slight bit of me also having interest in wanting to break dance. I have never done it myself, but that's something that, you know, I sometimes may fantasize about, oh, I wish I can do all that stuff. And I also love being on the trains, and the youth would come on the train and just dance and entertain and try to make a couple of dollars. So I always carried money with me just in case, you know, I was fortunate enough to have some of these Showtime dancers come on the train. And, you know, sometimes they would risk dancing because they weren't supposed to. You know, we had signs on the trains telling, you know, not to support Showtime dancers, or it's not the train is not for Showtime. But these kids were constantly doing that because that was their way of hopefully making their own money. And, you know, you still had people on the trains who didn't give a crap. They just enjoyed watching it. It was free entertainment in some sense, unless you were willing to, you know, donate a couple of dollars. So this book, you know, even though it compasses it showcases a lot of things that I wanted with Is Nana, and also being a celebration of Black culture, which is what the book is about. And I feel a lot of break dancing and b-boy dancing and Showtime is essentially Black culture in a sense in New York City. And I wanted to showcase and highlight that.
How does that go on right now? You've got, you know, with restricted movement and stuff, do they do it on the street?
Yeah, there's some that do it on the streets. I personally haven't been seeing it as much, and I haven't even been seeing it on the trains at all as well. And it's only recently that it's starting to get very busy on the trains again. A part of me, I hope I can see it again. I hope that you know, there's bigger fish to fry than a bunch of kids wanting to dance on a train and have fun. But it's definitely something that I miss seeing. I haven't been seeing a lot, but I'm pretty sure they're out there somewhere, still practicing their craft and doing what they can.
Well, that's good. It's good to see, because it's important for these kinds of different cultures to, you know, integrate and for people to get to familiar with them. So I think that you're doing a great job. It's a great idea to put it in a comic, because it's something I haven't seen, like I said, and I'm just fascinated. I mean, did I hear you right that you based these characters largely on some of the kids you knew?
Yeah. The characters that were produced took a life of their own, but they were definitely the original blueprint, you know, that I wanted. And I also wanted different body types that we don't quite see in comics. And it was something that I tried to stress with the artist, Miguel Blanco. And just to shout him out, he does an amazing job with just body types as well, and all the different characters that we see, even if they're just the background characters. You know, I enjoyed Miguel Blanco doing that, and he was someone that I really wanted on the book, especially because I was looking for somebody who had knowledge of New York culture, who knew the city life and being a person of color in the city and knowing the youth. And so when he came on board, it took me a while to find the right artist, because I actually wrote the script years ago, but I was always looking for the right artist, and he came along and he definitely showcased what I was looking for in terms of body types and the style that the character should have, even if it's extremely subtle. And he added a lot of his own sort of interest into the characters that we had a lot of fun with and so on.
That's great. It must have been quite a change for you, though, after mythological creatures to suddenly go into, you know, breakdancing. That's quite a radical change. How did you prepare for that? I mean, did you, as a writer, were you ready to do something different?
Well, that's the thing. For me, myself, when it comes to my writing, I dabble and experiment a lot, even though a lot of my work tends to be a little bit focused on horror or dark fantasy. You know, there's a mix of comedy in there. There's a mix of all types of genres that I absolutely love. And Iznana has, even though I market it as a dark fantasy or a horror coming of age book, not every story has been the same. You know, I've experimented even with sci-fi with Iznana. I've experimented with just, you know, the coming of age aspect, which is Showtime. But when it comes to the mythological, there's still a bit of that in Showtime, because before Iznana meets or joins these dancers, we see what his everyday life is, which is hunting down and stopping a lot of these creatures from different universes who are wrecking havoc. And so we get to meet an Impadulu who is actually from South Africa folklore. And we see them have their bout before Iznana decides he wants to join these kids and be a kid. You know, so we see these dancers' everyday lives, and we see Iznana's everyday life, and then we see them come together.
Yeah, it's great. It's such an interesting thing. It's so well written. Like I mentioned, the characters, I really get to care about these characters and get to understand them. So I just think, you know, that Greg, you've done a wonderful job on that, not only in the mythological, but in the breakdancing one. It's just as strong for us to understand who these people are on all the different levels. And I think that's one of the best parts about these books.
Thank you.
So I'm just so fascinated by how, you know, you integrate a lot of not only the breakdancing culture, but other, you know, diverse cultures. And I suppose living in New York as you do, that's probably something you're exposed to on a daily basis. It's fun for me because I don't get to New York all that often. New York Comic Con has been shelved this year. But I'm always interested to see how different people interact. And the characters, but also the interactions are lots of fun. And, you know, it's not a being the whole business of a were-spider. That to me is, I have to say, that's a very interesting take on a character. So Is the original, I mean, you're talking about the original Legend, was that character also a were-spider, or was that something that you developed for Isnana?
Well, Anansi, he's considered a spider or a spider god, but there are particular adaptions adaptions of the character where he may be half man, half spider, or a spider that takes a human form, or sometimes a human who takes a spider form. So there's usually different interpretations, but the original stories for Anansi, he was usually a spider who was just very clever, who would do tricks on whoever his enemies were or whoever stood in his way of whatever goal he had in mind that he wanted to accomplish for that particular story. So having Isnana be, you know, half boy, half spider, or rather a spider that turns into a boy, I think allowed me to play around with a lot of things that were visually appealing, but also terrifying, especially because there's a lot of people who are terrified of spiders. So I wanted to play with that dynamic and also have Isnana be one of the sweetest characters you'll ever meet, but he can turn pretty scary when he needs to turn scary. And it's also been a slight joy playing with creators and artists who were slightly arachnophobic. You know, like Walter Osley, he absolutely hates spiders, or he hated them. But he would have to draw all these spiders, and I think that sort of helped him get through eventually. I believe Angel Davis Cooper, who is the colorist for this, she might have some arachnophobia as well. I'm not too sure. I can't remember. But there were a couple of times where I guess she was a little creeped out for some of the things that we were doing.
Well, it's a challenge. I mean, you know, if you're an artist and you haven't done that very much, it's a good thing to be able to go into those regions and kind of tackle those. So I think that was really great that they were willing to take that on. That was excellent.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if I'm not being challenged as a writer, if I'm not challenging them and having fun, you know, creeping them out at the same time, you know, they may not be as effective as I want for the reader.
You know, one of the things that when I first started to read this that worried me a little bit was that Marvel has a very famous spider character. And, you know, he at one point sort of went were spider-ish, you know, multiple arms and all that good stuff. And I'm always worried that anybody who goes, it's like, you know, superhero comics. People are saying you can't go and do superhero comics because Marvel and DC own that genre. And yet you have come into this and made this really successful and really, you know, enjoyable and smart comic that does things differently and goes in a different place with the spider characters that Spider-Man has never done. And I just have to congratulate you on that because, you know, I know a lot of people who would be reluctant to go this route, and you have, you know, taken it and made it your own. And I just think that's a brilliant thing.
Thank you. Definitely on paper, there's some slight similarities between them. They're both being spider theme, and I've heard it all from so many people. You know, oh, this is just another Spider-Man, or, you know, this character already sort of exists. But once they actually read it, they see, wait, there's like no similarities. Even their use of powers is completely different. They don't have similar powers at all. They don't have similar backstories, themes. And a lot of that is, you know, I enjoy also just dispelling that feeling that people have that, oh, this is just another Spider-Man ripoff, you know, of some ways, until they actually read it and they realize, oh, crap, this is its own sort of thing.
Well, they don't have to worry about ripping off Spider-Man. Marvel does that a lot. They have lots and lots and lots of Marvel Spider-Man, Spider-Girl, Spider-Woman, Spider-this, Spider-that. But your thing is just unlike anything that I've ever seen. So I just think, you know, if somebody has not gotten into this book, I would highly encourage people. This is going to be unlike stuff you've ever read. And it's just a brilliant comic. Now, one of the things I noticed when I was looking through the Kickstarter was that you have won awards for this series. So far, I can see 7 awards on here, 2018 Fan Award, Rising Star Award, Best Male Character Award, 2019 Best Male Character Award again, 2019 Best Writer Award and Story of the Year Award, and this year Best Male Character Award. I mean, wow. I mean, that's a lot of recognition for a book that, you know, that I'm sure Marvel would prefer not to have see around. But I just think, you know, it's a credit to the stuff that you're doing and the storytelling, the unique take that you're doing on it. That I just think that it's, you know, you're getting recognized. And I really hope that people will take the time and get into this and find these books and find the Kickstarter and get on board, because this is something I have never seen before. And I love when I find something I haven't seen before. So your stuff is really enjoyable to me.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So as far as like the awards and stuff, I mean, does that kind of make it a little harder for you? I mean, do you feel a little more pressure when these kinds of things come, when you get more and more recognition? Do you feel like you have to somehow do things a little differently, or do you keep doing what you're doing, which is how you got the awards in the first place?
Definitely the latter. I'm extremely grateful for the awards, the recognition, the accolades. I just keep doing what I'm doing, because obviously that's what's been resonating with a lot of people who really take to the book. So I'm definitely not going to change the core element of what I'm going for. I'm going to just keep doing what I'm doing. If the awards stop coming, I'm not going to feel any slighted, you know, just as long as I still have people supporting me, enjoying the character, enjoying the book, that's exactly where my heart is at.
Well, like I said at the beginning, you've already met your goal, and you set a not terribly modest goal either, and you shot right past that. How long did it take before you said you were surprised by how fast it happened? How fast did it happen?
It actually got funded in 3 days.
And really?
I was actually pretty scared. I was pretty terrified when I put the goal, because I was thinking, okay, I've never, even though I've reached that goal or close to it before with Iznana, I was just terrified, you know, because I'd never had it actually set that high. And I at the same time, what I decided that, you know what, this is the money that I needed to actually fund everything I need, so I shouldn't try to shortchange myself, and I don't want to risk, you know, asking for lower than I actually need. And then if I do reach the goal that I need, or I actually don't reach it, you know, that's just going to come and bite me, you know, in the rear end. So I just put it at where exactly it needed to be from all the calculations that I did. And I just hope for the best. And I was quite shocked how well we did within the first day. And then by the third day, to see that it was funded, I was bewildered. I was extremely excited. I was extremely taken aback, you know, and each time that I give, you know, a day passes, I'm just like, wow, we're still climbing. Even yesterday, I actually took a break from marketing or pushing the book at all anywhere. And we crossed over already to, I think it was 13K already. And I was just like, what the heck? You know, people are enjoying it, you know, it seems, and spreading the word. So I'm extremely excited about that.
Which is great. I mean, you know, Kickstarter to me is one of those wonderful things. I always tell people I wish Kickstarter had been around longer, because I worry about the stories we didn't get to see because Kickstarter wasn't here. And, you know, see, for you, I'm glad it's here, because you get to access that and you get to make this good book happen. And it not only does it help you get the funds you need, but it also raises awareness and gets people to understand more about the book. Because, you know, a lot of people go through Kickstarter and trying to find projects that they'd like to support. And clearly people have found your project, which is great. And you know, I don't want to say that in any way to hinder people from going out and looking at it. Go and look at it, because I think you're going to really enjoy it. It's going to be something, particularly me who loves variety. I love the different characters, and I love the different situations. And I love the way that you do all these things. In fact, do you want to talk a little bit? Because there's several other characters that rotate around Iznana and stuff like that as we go through the stories. Do you want to mention some of the other characters that are in there? Because I find them really fascinating.
For Showtime specifically, or
well, no, you get other ones too. If you want to talk about Showtime specifically, yeah, that'd be fine. But there's the other two previous two volumes had some really interesting people going around too.
Yeah. So, aside from Isnana himself, I'd say his co-star is his father, Anansi. You know, I really wanted to also tackle the father and son element between them and the development of him, I guess, coming on his own while also trying to live up to his father's legacy, because his father is this astound god, you know, this god of stories. And Isnana wants to make him proud, especially because he's never, I don't want to say he's never been his father's favorite, but they never really had a relationship before. And so this was sort of, I wanted to really tackle on the two of them learning from each other. So even Anansi has to learn to be patient with Isnana, and the fact that Anansi is a bit of a fight ready, sneaky jerk sometimes, you know, and he has to respect the fact that his kid is actually he's a sweet, innocent kid. While Isnana has to also learn the fact that sometimes you do have to fight, even though you're pushed against the wall. It's not your nature. Sometimes you have to defend yourself, especially in this world. So we have the two of them. Osibo the Leopard is the villain of Volume 1, who gets attached to Roger, who's a civilian, an innocent in this sort of battle. And Roger becomes a bit of a slight supporting member as well, who shows up in Showtime. We have in Volume 2, Isnana meets a family who gets caught up in Queen Mboro's and Princess Kansai's sort of war against humanity when they come to our world. These killer hornets, bees, and wasps who team up together to invade people's bodies and hopefully try to take over. And we also meet a couple of Haitian mythological and spiritual figures as well in that volume. I go through a whole spiel of different characters. You know, majority of them black, just to showcase them as more as main characters and not side characters in these trippy fantasy stories. And for Showtime, you know, Isnana meets three individuals. Princess C, who is an Asian B-girl dancer. I wanted to showcase the girls and the women who were also break dancers that we don't always see recognized. And also Target, showcase another race, because I know quite a number of Asian b-boy dancers. So I wanted to have that represented in some shape or form, especially given the diversity in New York City. We have Gri-Gri, who is a Puerto Rican, who is more so like the bit of the cynic in the group, who has a hard time fully accepting Isnana. But he has his soft side as well. And Crimson, who is darker skin, Caribbean as well, and has vitiligo. Mm-hmm.
Diversity is a great thing. Now, one of the things in your books I notice you don't shy away from, you talked about it being a horror book. There is one sequence in the first book that really got to me.
I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, I bet you do. I don't even know if I want to spoil it, try to spoil it, but let's just say somebody, an animal, gosh, I don't know. I don't want to spoil it in that sense, but let's just say a human being is influenced by an animal. Let's leave it that way. And it's dramatic. I mean, wow. I read it and I was just like, whoa, because it's an amazing sequence. It just, you know, and this is early in the volume too. It's pretty early on. And so I got a feeling that, wow, I said, this book is going to be something I'm going to want to pay attention to as I go through. So does your writing, do those sequences come naturally to you, or are those, you know, is this based on some kind of folklore or something, some kind of things? Because I'm just not familiar with it enough to know. Is this the kind of thing that you know happens in folklore that you bring to the comic, or is this your creativity going, mixture of both? How does this work?
I think it's a mixture of everything that I'm into. You know, one thing with Isnana is that it's also a bit of a body horror type of book. You know, there's a lot of strange things that we see happening, and we see distortion of bodies and parts and possessions in a way. So possessions is quite common in some African spirituality, and I felt like it fit the narrative that I was going for in this sort of this invasion of someone's core. And it just seemed like a natural thing to write. And I was also extremely curious to see how Walter, the artist, was going to draw it, because his art style is absolutely bonkers. I love Walter's work. In every Isnana story that I do, I want him involved in. I wasn't able to get him to do anything for Showtime. I wanted him to at least do a cover, but Walter is like blown up with his own work, so it's very hard to get him to sit down and hire him without some, you know, leeway in time. But, you know, even the way that Walter did that scene, and I remember him telling me that he was like, "What the hell are you making me draw?" You know, and that's something that's very common with our work relationship, because I always write something that he's just like, "Greg, come on, dude, you know, how am I going to figure this out?" And he always knocks it out the park.
Yeah, I've talked to Walter in the past, and he does, you know, he's great on your book, but he's also great on some other ones too. I've seen him he gets involved in a lot of indie comics, which is, you know, to his credit, he can do those kinds of things. He can take on these challenges. And I'm sure as an artist, that's great fun for him to be able to do this stuff that he's never going to get to draw for Marvel or DC. That's just never going to happen. But you delight in having him do these things and stretching his ability to show these things. And I just think it's great fun. When I came across that, I went, yikes. So, and you know, there are other ones that are somewhat similar, but that was the one that got me. So, you know, if you want to read a book that you'll see stuff you haven't seen before, it's not another Were Spider is a place you want to go. I can tell you, it's such wonderful stuff and such different things. And I love that. I, you know, as somebody who's read comics for many years, I am always thrilled when I see something new and different. And with your stuff, it's just a great experience for me to go someplace I haven't been before. Like I like to say, where no comic reader has ever gone before. And that's your books. I'm learning culture. I'm seeing things I've never seen before. I mean, people I probably have never met before. So on a lot of levels, this is a new experience for me. And I think a lot of other people would get that and really enjoy that as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. That it means a lot. You know, it's, I'm always very grateful to hear how many people took to it, especially people who had no knowledge of any of the characters that I'm showcasing. And one thing that has always made me feel really good was when readers would tell me that they took the time to actually do research on some of the characters or the concepts that I actually introduced. And that always makes me feel like I did a great job.
See, that's, I think in my mind, that's what comics are for. That you have an unlimited special effects budget.
Yes, exactly. Which is why I torture Walter.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's only limited by your imagination and what Walter and other artists can do. And for that reason, I just think that it's one of those creative books. It's the word I keep wanting to use with it. It's special. It's different. It's, you know, it's going to make you think, and it's going to take you places you haven't seen or haven't been before. And so I think Isnana's got a wonderful future ahead of it. I mean, you've already gotten your Kickstarter, you know, goal pledged, and you've got still a lot of days to go. So there's good things to happen. If I know you, you've probably got some other things in mind. This is kind of a change of pace kind of story. Do you have in mind what you're going to do after Showtime?
Yes, I actually have I'm working on the next one shot, which is being drawn by Sean Hill, who is this absolutely amazing, amazing artist, extremely brilliant with his line work, his details. It is called The Drums of Ogun, which will be following the voodoo god of war and the Orisha Ogun as well. So Iznana will be meeting him and a whole bunch of other wonky characters. It's going to be a lot. It's going to be very different from what we've seen with Iznana. It's definitely going to have like some epic fights that we've been seeing, but it will be a lot more visceral than we've seen before.
Cool. And the only suggestion I would make to you is don't go where we've been before. Don't go to Roman mythology or Greek mythology. We've done that. Let's go to places we haven't been. And that's something I think your book does so well and so smartly. I mean, it's just, every time I come away knowing a lot more about the subject matter and the people and the kind of storytelling you're doing. So I that's the only thing I would say. Don't ever stray into the familiar territory. Keep doing what you're doing, which is obviously successful and obviously a lot of fun.
Thank you.
So, okay, the Kickstarter will end on September 30th on a Wednesday at 11 in the morning Eastern Time. And if we want to keep up with your good stuff, how do we do that? Are you on social media?
Yes, I am on social media. You can find me at Greg Anderson, L-E-S-E-E, E-L-Y-S-E-E on Facebook. If you're on Twitter, you can find me at Greg, A-N-D-E-L-Y-S-E-E. So that's Greg and L-E-S-E. At IG, at Greg Day, G-R-E-G-D-A-E. I'm on those three specifically. You'll be able to find me. I'm always posting something. I'm always trying to cause trouble sometimes on Facebook. But yeah, you'll find me in those particular platforms. And of course, I tend to do a lot of updates on my Kickstarter pages. So if you pledge, if you back it, it's like you have like a automatic mailing list for any Iznana product or release that that will hopefully come out in the future.
Do you have a website?
I do. So it is Webway Comics.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, webwaycomics.ecwid.com.
Well, it's worth repeating. I forgot, but you did say that, so that's good to have that in there. Again, it's Iznana, and maybe we should spell it Is-apostrophe-N-A-N-A, the where hyphen spider, colon showtime is the way it is on Kickstarter. And, you know, I would wish you success, but you've already got good success on it, but more success is what I hope you get. And I hope more people discover your books and the stories you tell. And I'd like to talk with you again sometime, maybe when the next time a Kickstarter comes around, you and I will talk again. And we'll try to get the word out as often as we can to get more people interested in this, Nana.
Yeah, thank you. I'd love to be back. Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.